Mammoth
Audio. This is Scammapalooza. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au. And if you do enjoy the show, why not head to iTunes and leave a review? Because you're a good person. That's why not. Over the past decade, there's been a trend for magicians to make their art form more cool. The 40-something Chris Angel dressing up like an emo 14-year-old, while the disaffected Dynamo is so laid back one begins to question whether he doesn't have some kind of acquired brain injury. Every new face wants to shrug off magic's history of top hats, sequins and tight leather pants in favour of some kind of bland pseudo-hipster new veneer. Which is what makes John Vanderput's Piff the Magic Dragon such a breath of fresh air. Not only does John perform classics of magic in a satin green dragon costume, the character of Piff is grumpy, misanthropic, and sometimes downright mean. And it works. Piff and his dragon-clad chihuahua Mr. Piffles have over 12 million views on YouTube, where the standout stars of both Penn & Teller's Foolus and America's Got Talent, and recently opened for Mumford & Sons UK tour. What is the secret to Piff's success, and where does the man end and the dragon begin? My name is Nicholas J. Johnson, and this is Scammapalooza.
So I first saw you perform in like 2000 and maybe 2007 or 2008 at the Free Fringe at Edinburgh Fringe, and you were Piff the Magic Dragon. And
so that would have been 2009, actually.
Oh, 2009. Okay. And that was a great show, but I don't know anything about you before then at all. Like, I just, as far as I'm concerned, Piff the Magic Dragon began in 2009 and you just didn't exist as a person before that.
Pretty happy with that story.
Awesome. Just like there was an egg, Piff the Magic Dragon cracked out like monkey magic.
No, it just come out.
Why does, and this is probably a big question, but why does Piff work as a character? Why do people respond to Piff doing magic more than they do other magicians?
Yeah, it's because I'm fucking amazing. No, I think the only question I can answer accurately is why I created Piff, which was because I was fed up of that whole, you know, people doing magic and pretending that they had magic powers and taking themselves very seriously. And I was always like, look, if you're going to pretend that you have magic powers, then why on earth would you find the four clubs or make a bunny rabbit appear? You know, surely you should use that power for good. So when I stumbled across the concept of doing a magic dragon thing, then it sort of like answered that question for me that I could pretend to be, you know, by pretending to be a magic dragon, it was so ridiculous, people would never take it seriously. So that means I could pretend a lot harder and it sort of becomes a lot more believable.
Because you do dig up some fairly old magic, some stuff which normally people don't do outside of magic clubs, and you make it, I don't know if relevance is the right word, but people don't bat an eyelid at it. Like you do a sol. You walk out with the classic appearing table that hasn't been sort of fashionable or interesting or amazing for, you know, 30 years.
Well, also because it's made well. I mean, this is the other thing about magic is people often forget the classic stuff. It gets mass marketed. So like when you see when you buy a Harbin table off the shelf, and it sort of falls out and just, you know, sloshes into position. You know, there's nothing really that satisfying about that. But when, you know, the guy who made that one for me, like, has built loads and loads of stuff and worked for a guy who knew Harbin very well and just knows all the inside tips on that stuff. So when my one drops down, it sort of drops out and then it smashes open. It's just like really satisfying. So I think that's the other thing as well. People, you know, people often do the classic stuff terribly.
It seems like even though you are, you know, dressed up as a dragon, that you're taking yourself seriously as a magician nonetheless.
Off stage, I take the magic very seriously. But, I mean, on stage, I'll sometimes throw away a bit of magic. Like, I did this thing where we wanted to have, like, a levitation for Mr. Piffles. So we had one built, and it was very expensive, and it looked amazing. Except the motor in it meant that Piffles would rise vertically up, stop, and then lower vertically down. So there was no real mystery because it was obviously on a motor. You know, just by the motion of it, you could tell it was on a motor. But, you know, you still couldn't tell how, you know, you just looked at it and it looked like a dog standing still and rising up. So anyway, after a couple of shows, I realized it was funnier to, because we have to have music to cover the sound of the motor. So I realized it was a lot funnier to cut the music and then say, look, get down from there. And then he just goes, and he starts blowing up. And I would get magicians come up to me after a show going, oh, great show, but by the way, you can actually hear that motor, you know. And to do with you guys anymore. So sometimes I definitely do sacrifice the magic, but I try not to. And I definitely make the magic as good as possible.
Tommy Cooper based his whole career around sacrificing the magic for comedy, and he did pretty well from it. So I think there's a time and a place.
Easy Jonathan would be in that category as well.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think either of them cared as much about the magic as they did about the getting the laugh. I don't know. Watching you perform, you clearly care about the magic moment. That moment when the impossible happens. You want the gas.
I think it gives the character longevity, especially it gives my character longevity, because if I didn't have the magic to back it up, you know, he wouldn't really be a magic dragon. He'd be a shitty, you know, not really a magic dragon.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people dressed up in costumes doing bad magic out there, and I guess you want to stand out.
I just think the thing is that the fact that he can do great magic should be the least interesting thing about him. You know, certainly to myself, like in that character, it's like, yeah, obviously I can do magic, but like, actually I want to talk about why my wife left me or whatever it is. You know, it should be like, yeah, you've got a, you know, what's the most interesting thing about a taxi driver? It's not that he drives taxis.
The most interesting thing about a taxi driver is that he drops bricks off an overpass at Uber drivers when they're going underneath.
Or he just will openly be racist to anyone who steps in the car. You know, the most interesting thing about a magician can't be the fact that they can do magic. If it is, then it's a boring act and I'm not really interested in seeing it.
That said, I don't know if this is true, but the first time I saw you get kind of international acclaim was on Fool Us with Penn & Teller. Point of that show, unless I'm wrong, is to perform the best possible magic you can.
What does everyone talk about that spot? It's when I ate a banana. The most interesting thing I did on that was eat a banana. Yeah, nobody says, oh, he did that trick where he changed the card.
No, to be honest, I was sitting. I was struggling to actually remember the trick that you did. I did remember that you blew up the notepad at the, you know, the flash paper at the end. But you're right, you just ate a banana on television.
The most interesting thing about my act is not that should be the... That should be the, you know, the membership card to me being on stage. I can do magic, therefore I'm allowed on stage. But now, what's the most interesting thing I'm going to do is not going to be the magic. But the difficult thing is with an act like mine, that if the magic is weak, then it gives the whole thing an Achilles heel, and someone can rip it apart. So if the magic was shitty, Penn and Teller would have just, you know, they would have ripped it apart.
I see the selection of performers that show up on that show, and it's people that I wouldn't imagine normally putting their hand up to be on a TV talent show of sorts. And it seems like that they go deep into the magic community to get magicians rather than people who want to be famous.
Yeah, I mean, because Johnny Thompson's involved and also it's Penn and Teller, then I think, you know, you're more likely to get some of those more qualified magicians who are not going to do some of the other talent shows. But yeah, I mean, I just auditioned and then they asked me to do it. And then there was this thing and they were like saying, can you do the trick where I levitate Mr. Piffles? And I said, no, because the magic is not strong enough. It would just be stupid. They would just be like, no, this, and it would be, my act would be dismissed. Whereas I at least wanted to make them think. That's all I really wanted to do is make them think. And so I said to him, no, I'm not doing that. And I said, I want to do this trick. And if you don't let me do this trick, then I'm not doing anything. And I'll just walk away from it. And they went, oh, don't worry. No, you can just do that trick. And then you can do anything you want. Just whatever you want. It's 10 minutes. You just write it and do anything you want. Yeah. So basically they just gave me complete creative control from start to finish. So I sort of wrote the whole VT package and, suggested that all, and we went and filmed it, and I worked with it there, and then we did that. You know, I was like, right, I'm gonna do the trick here, and then I'm gonna eat the banana, and then I'm gonna mess around with the host, and then I'm gonna do the dog pipes to get off.
That is something that I have noticed about you, is you don't seem to really care whether people, you don't seem to be one for negotiating, or you don't really want to mess around. You want to come in and do the best possible job you can.
I just don't want to look like an idiot, really. When it comes to something that I think is going to make me look like an idiot, I'll just be like, oh no, I'm fine, thank you. But the thing is that with these companies, they want to make good TV. You know, people have got the idea that they're out to like screw you and all this stuff. And I was certainly feeling like that about America's Got Talent when I went in. But I very quickly learned that they just want to make good television. They love working with people who are good. And if you're good, then they'll just give you complete creative freedom to do whatever you want, you know. And to some extent, I think there were some things I got wrong. And I was like, no, I want to do this. And I did it. And it was wrong, you know, but they let me make those mistakes.
Yeah, that's something in the first sort of 2 or 3 years of Australia's Got Talent that they didn't do. They were either very, very controlling, or they would let you do whatever you wanted, and then it was edited however they wanted you to look. So, you know, there was a guy who got massive, massive cheers, huge audience response just for playing the ukulele naked. But it got edited down so that he just looked like an idiot. 10 seconds, walks on stage, there's a buzzer, everyone buzzes, and he has to leave the stage, which wasn't what happened on the day. So it sounds like you had a much more positive experience with America's Got Talent then.
Yeah, and who knows? Certainly I've got nothing but good things to say about America's Got Talent, you know, and my experience with it.
Do you get recognized very often now?
So there was, years ago, there's a magician called Jeffrey Durham in the UK, who's a very famous English magician. And I saw him coming out of a... Hey. So I saw him coming out of a cinema, and I said, oh, it's Jeffrey Durham, isn't it? And he looked at me and he said, yes, and he walked off. At the time, I was writing a blog about how rude he was. So anyway, a year later or something, I needed some help with a project, and somebody said, oh, you should speak to Jeffrey about it. So I rang him up and I was speaking to him, and he emailed me this thing, and he said, oh, by the way, I'm sorry I was rude, but I have people, you know, I got a lot of people coming to me all the time. And I felt mortified that he'd read this thing, because I was like quite rude to him on this blog. But you know, it really made me reconsider. I was like, yeah, he has people all the time coming up to him like, oh, hello, how are you doing, and to be on point 24 hours a day is tough. I mean, luckily I got a dragon outfit, so I don't get it so much.
Do you remember at Adelaide Fringe a couple of years ago, there was a guy who you bumped into, and I can't even remember who it was.
No, what was happening? This was a crazy thing. I was changing it to get I was getting ready for a gig, and he was about 20 meters away from me, and his friend came over and said hi, and I said hi, and his friend went back. And that was it. That was the interaction. And then the next day it was, oh, met Piff the Magic Dragon. This is a complete other guy. Met Piff the Magic Dragon today. Turns out he's a bit of a cunt. And I was like, what? What? And it was because I didn't go over to them and introduce myself and say, hello, my name's Piff the Magic Dragon, or John. How are you all doing today? Then because I didn't go and walk over to them, then I was a bit of a cunt.
He ended up apologizing from memory, sort of.
Through you.
Yeah, I think I may have called him an arsehole.
You had a word with him.
I was more interested in saying something funny on Twitter than sorting out the differences between magicians, to be honest. That's magicians, though.
Here's the thing. Tommy, you're right, it is magicians. Tommy Wonder, I saw a lecture by him, and Tommy said, why is it that magicians of any level feel they can come and talk to you? You know, you can have like a... Now, this is going to sound bad, but whatever. Yeah, I mean, I get myself in enough trouble.
That's fine.
But, you know, but this is, remember, this is Tommy Wonder's words, not my words. Okay. So let's blame Tommy. He can't defend himself, right? But he definitely said this. And he said, you know, there's a thing in every other culture where people who are, you know, further down the path of mastery have a bit more respect than others. So, you know, if you're just starting off, you don't go and speak to, you know, the grandmaster at the, wherever it is, the karate center. I don't know. Or, you know, and hooray, you just have more respect around them. Whereas magicians just seem to be like, oh, yeah, I'm a magician too. I've done, you know, I've learned 3 card tricks and now you and I, we're on the same level. I'm like, and I get people doing that to me a lot, coming up to me like, you know, like expecting to be welcomed with open arms, and I'm going to go and have dinner with them and talk to them about my show and tell them all my tricks.
I think that's because magicians, a lot of magicians at the top level, and people like Tommy Wonder included, make a lot of their living from selling magic and books and DVDs and tricks to magicians. They create one half of that conversation by saying to magicians, hey, here's something, you know, here's a secret, here's an idea, here's something cool you might like. And it's kind of no wonder that other magicians see that, learn from, go, oh, this is a guy who's trying to talk to me and trying to engage with me, not realizing.
I mean, that is one of the reasons I stopped lecturing, because I was just not interested in having people perform my material. Have you ever lectured?
I've done 3 lectures. The times I've done it, you know, there's been old men sort of chatting at the back and people asking stupid questions. Don't really want to do this.
I was just watching, I was, you know, talking about stuff that I'd spent a long time making and that I cared about and that I'd spent a long time thinking about. People would ask stupid questions, or they take it and ruin it in their performances, or they just openly admit to stealing my jokes, or, you know, and I was just like, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know why I want to be around you people. So I sort of, as soon as I started doing the dragon thing, I decided to never lecture that stuff again. And also, I mean, one of the reasons I lectured was because people were ripping it off. So I wanted to get out there and claim it, you know. But with the dragon, it doesn't get ripped off so much.
Hang on, there has been a rip-off, though. I have a vague memory of a South Korean Piff the Magic Dragon. Is that something that I've...
A Ukrainian
Piff the Magic Dragon. He went on Ukraine's Got Talent or whatever, and he was pointed out as a rip-off, yeah?
I think they gave him the act.
Yeah, so they gave him the act just so they could basically set him up for the fall.
What, you're telling me that he's going to, on his own, make a dragon outfit, you know, get this harbin table, get the banner done, learn this trick? It's just bullshit. It was obviously somebody went, oh, you look a bit like this guy, you should do his act, and then they made everything for him.
And yet after that, you still went on America's Got Talent.
I never really think about this stuff. Like, I didn't have much work in America. I had a green card, so that's where I lived in America. And so I decided to, I thought, oh, well, I'll try and get some exposure and go on America's Got Talent. And then I just stuck rigidly to my guns. Well, what actually happened was they said, I did an audition and they said, great, we'd love you to do it. And then I changed my mind because I thought they were going to treat me really badly. So I changed my mind and I said, no, I don't want to do it. And I had a producer ring me up and say, you know, just like offer more and more stuff. And in the end, there's all the things that I was worried about, which was, you know, I could only do 90 seconds and I couldn't have the dog because I was going straight to London and all this sort of stuff. They were just like, look, do as long as you want. Do whatever you want. Like, if you don't like it, we'll bin it. You know, we'll just bin the footage, which at the time I didn't believe. But now I definitely think they would have got rid of it because they stuck to their word with everything else. They were amazing. So, I just didn't have an argument for them. And I went and did it. And it went fine, and then they edited it incredibly. You know, they really captured the essence of my act and just nailed it. So I was very grateful to them.
So your act's obviously, it's recorded, it's then edited, and then people are watching it months, years after it happened. Do you think that those people who are watching at home are getting the full experience? I mean, are they really watching magic? And I've never been amazed by a magic video.
Not even as a kid?
No, I remember going, oh, I wish I could do that, or I wish I could have been there, and maybe other kids. But I, you know what, I feel like any sense of amazement I probably had, you know, watching Astro Boy just as much as I did watching a magician.
I would agree with you on some shows, which will remain nameless. But there was one show in the UK called Stuff the White Rabbit, which is close-up magic. And to me, that was incredible. And I would just stop it and watch it over and over again. But like, how is this happening? And I would say also probably the first Blaine special. And the magic was so intimate and so direct that it looked, you know, it definitely gave me that experience of seeing. I felt like I was watching magic.
You think that people who aren't magicians, when they watch something that's highly edited or something that's obviously using stooges or that's not a genuine experience, do you think that even if they don't notice it consciously, that they subconsciously can feel that they're watching something manufactured?
I'm not actually sure what the truth is, because I remember there was a TV show called, you know, Dynamo's first show in the UK. Yeah. Maybe his first or second show. Anyway, it had some ridiculous bits in it. You know, some of it was like plausible, quote-unquote magic, and some of it was ridiculous. You would disappear from one place and appear on a building, you know, 50 meters away. And I was like, this is just pushing the plausible too far. But I was in a cafe and these guys were talking about this show their kids were watching called Dynamo, and it was amazing and blah, blah, blah. And then they were saying, oh, and he, you know, puts a phone in a bottle. And they were like, how does he do it? And you're just like, I was thinking, I thought they would be saying, oh, my kids were telling me he puts a phone in a bottle, but, you know, whatever. But they would just as much suck it in as the kids. And so it's almost like, because it's on television in front of a live audience, it seems that somehow they've got this authenticity about it that is ridiculous. It's impossible.
I mean, that street magic, which is going out and doing stuff for real people on the street, that to me is as close to the real experience as you're going to get. But what you're doing, I guess, is kind of as far away from street magic as you can possibly get, in that you're a... a dragon and you are, you know, the sort of shows you're doing are, you know, in these kind of big, massive audiences and it's as you said, it's tightly edited. Is that a situation where the fact that you are entertaining, where the magic, the strong magic is the least important part, really starts to sort of play in your favor? Is that, do you think, why you've done better on that show in particular than other magicians would have?
I definitely think the magic's very important, but I think that once it's got to that point where the magic is strong, then it sort of fades into the background and I can start making a sandwich. And then, I mean, the reason why I would say that stuff connects is because I'm fucking with the constraints of that TV show. You know, they haven't had any, they apparently they hadn't had anyone trot down to the judge's table and start drinking Heidi's drink and talking to them and while they were judging me.
And it is very hard for them to judge you when Piff clearly doesn't care about being judged and seems to show them nothing but disdain as a character. Just doesn't seem to care.
You know, because it's not about disdain, it's just that my priorities are different. The audience will react poorly against such like negativity. If I was really disdainful of them, the audience wouldn't like that. Because the audience invests in these judges. You know, to some degree, the audience likes the judges and is invested with them. So you can't just come and like sort of like piss all over that. You've got to be respectful, but just find a different way of sidestepping the system.
There is a point, though, in your appearance and in most people's appearances where they reach a level of success where you can see the input of the producers on the acts. So when the production values suddenly go through the roof and when, for example, the Game of Bones, they've taken the character who up until that point kind of looks as if he sort of wandered into the studio and you know, the sort of security is waiting in the wings trying to, you know, for this insane dragon to leave the stage so they can ask him to leave the premises. There's a point where it kind of goes out the window and you can see that they're heavily involved in making your act big.
Well, that's funny because that's not actually that true because it's slightly true. What had happened was my game plan for that show was to, you know, start small and then do the bigger and bigger theatrical pieces that we had in the live show. You know, so we'd do this thing in the live show called Dog or No Dog, which is like a version of Deal or No Deal with those four boxes hanging from the ceiling and that whole trick. You know, with the baseball bat and with the bowling ball.
Yeah.
And on the phone, we have this creative meeting and I wanted to do Dog on a Dog, but they'd had somebody done it on a previous show, previous season.
Dog or No Dog?
Sorry, Deal or No Deal. So they didn't want to reuse the Deal or No Deal, and it was a mentalist. And he did some terrible trick with Howie. So they didn't want to reuse that theme. So I was like, okay, well, I want to do this trick. And I said, well, why don't we do something? Maybe we could do like a Game of Thrones thing, like a Game of Bones thing. And then they hopped on that idea. And this, I mean, we're going to do a big throne and all that. And, you know, I was like, yeah, that stuff all sounds funny. And then that's, you know, comedy. I mean, you know what this is like. When you go, this sounds funny, and then you do it, and it's like, that wasn't as funny as we thought. And then they also had a few technical problems on the night, just with the sound, where the judges couldn't hear what I was saying and all this stuff, which didn't really help. But I learned from that what my idea had been, which was to make my act bigger and bigger and bigger each week, was completely wrong because what the audience had bought into was this sort of like dragon who didn't really give a shit and just wandering around stage and all that sort of stuff. The audience weren't ready to go on that leap to the next stage. You know, they sort of just wanted to stay there. And in a Vegas show or in a bigger theatrical show, I could take them on that journey, but I couldn't take them on that journey in, you know, on America's Got Talent. And I realized that America's Got Talent was really just an advert for my act, and it should just be the same advert over and over again, you know, with sort of some different scenery, but it shouldn't be trying to like, you know, it shouldn't be trying to do all the movie sequels in one advert.
We had we had Dee Madigan as a political advertising executive on the podcast, and she was talking about you got to whenever they're having an election campaign, that they've got to kind of stick to their message and just keep sort of pummeling that message in. And it sounds like you've got to do the same thing when you're on those kind of shows.
And then on the finals, there was a slight danger that we were going to win. So I was like, screw it, we're going to shoot my dog out of the cannon and do what everyone hates. That was the last thing I wanted to do was win. So I was like, all right, we're going back to the stuff people don't like.
So what happens when you win? Because I've heard that said by a lot of people who've been on, not just America's Got Talent, but, you know, Pop Idol and Australian Idol and all of those shows, is you never want to win because you get tied up in a contract.
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure whether it would have made any difference in the end. I think there's been so much negative talk about these talent shows that it starts to be, you know, you start to become a bit of a mist and you can't really see what's actually going on. I think, I'm not sure, who knows, it will be speculative. You know, it'd be interesting to see what happens with Paul Zerdin, who won this year. If I'd have won, I don't know, maybe it wouldn't have made any difference. Maybe it would have been even better than it is now, who knows.
Would you do a Piff the Magic Dragon TV special? Is that something that you think would be fun?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to get made at the moment.
Oh, really? What's your pitch? Can you give me your pitch, or do you want to keep it under your hat?
Life of a Magic Dragon.
Great.
This is how a dragon survives. And
what, are you going to put together a pilot, or are you sort of pitching to someone to make it for you?
Yeah, like all the, my management is talking to all these people. I mean, it's like my other thing is like I don't worry about things until they. Otherwise, you get so caught up in that. Oh, what might happen? I mean, that's why I love working so much. Because I don't want to sit around at home thinking about what could be happening.
Do you know what? Like, pretty much everything you have said about how you work and how you operate and what you do, I do the exact opposite. So I sit at home and worry about my projects. I'm always trying to think about, oh, but is the magic the magic is overtaking the character, all of that sort of stuff. So you're starting to make me feel like I've been living my life entirely the wrong way up until this point, and I should have come to one of your lectures.
Oh no, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but like. I think it's difficult to get that opportunity to work as much as we can. You know, right now, we're just out on tour. We're working like 7 nights a week because I love working. And, you know, I sort of believe that the more you're out on stage, the more everything comes together, you know, in the whole picture. So, I just think you should just get out there and do it. Deadlines are a really good thing for me.
I don't think I'd get very much done without deadlines. I've written two books so far. The first one took me about 5 years. Actually, I started the first one in 2009, about the time that I saw your show. And then that came out last year. And then I had 12 months to write the second one because I was under contract and I got it done because I had the deadline there to do it. So
The other thing I think is important as well is magicians have got this thing about failing where they don't ever... First of all, they don't want to fail. And then secondly, they laugh at failure. And you know, if someone fails, then people are like, ah, look at that guy, he failed, what an idiot. And, you know, in any sort of creative discipline, failure is the most important thing. You know, it's how we get better, it's how we learn. So I think it's crazy that magicians are always, oh, I can't go out and do this until it's perfect. Or, you know, they start mocking people for being a failure.
That is great advice for any artistic pursuit. But you're right, magicians can be dicks sometimes.
Yeah, myself included.
But you've created a character. You've piffed the magic dragon. You can be a dick and people don't take you too seriously.
And you know how that started, right, that character?
No, I asked you at the beginning and you said you wanted to keep the mystery.
Oh, no, I was only kidding. I started because I was being fired everywhere.
Really?
Yeah, I was being fired for being too grumpy. Everywhere.
Really?
I was relying on magic as my income, and I was like, well, this is getting really bad now because I need to earn a living. And I stumbled across this dragon outfit. My sister had one, and I went to a fancy dress party, and somebody said, oh, you should be Puff the Magic Dragon. And they said, oh, I could be Piff the Magic Dragon. And as soon as I did it, suddenly, all the grumpiness just became funny. And I could even be more grumpy. I could say what I really wanted to say instead of only what I half, you know. I could just go full tilt for it and just be as grumpy as I wanted, you know, have no filter, and everyone would just laugh. And the more I had no filter, the more people were laughing.
Wait, so you're telling me that now all of these television appearances, millions of views on YouTube, all these people helping you put together these acts and all of these appearances, and it all comes down to therapy because you've got an anger management problem?
I don't know. But it just means that, like, I go to morning radio and I'm like, why are you all looking so happy? This is, what is your problem? Why are we up this early? I'm hungry. Where's the food? Like, nobody's giving me anything to eat. Like, you all like being all chirpy. You want me to do some magic trick for you. You know what? You just choose a card. I don't want to get involved. Just, where's the snacks? I go to the fridge. The fridge is always empty on morning television. I'm like, why is your fridge empty? This is the lie of show business, an empty fridge. And everyone's just pissing themselves. Now, if I did that without a dragon outfit on, they'd be like, who is this guy? This guy is, you know, let's never get this guy back on. Put a dragon outfit on, do that. Everyone thinks it's hilarious.
So you're a court jester then. You're, you know, the classic clown telling truth to power.
It's absolutely what it is.
I'm going to go out and buy a dragon costume and get myself on Ukrainian television.
Do it.
What sort of Piff merchandise do you have?
We've got some T-shirts and we've got posters, but we're just about to release playing cards, Piff coins, stickers, tiny Piffle, mini Piffle dolls, Mr. Piffle dolls, hoodies, and Mr. Piff and Piff dolls.
I remember seeing in a $2 shop a Piff the Magic Dragon doll that was like a little... It was actually a Mr. Piffles doll that was a small dog wrapped up in a dragon costume. I couldn't tell whether it was a legitimate rip-off that had just been badly made or a coincidence. Do you see that kind of stuff a lot? Are people ripping you off?
I have seen a couple of Halloween outfits sold as Piff the Magic Dragon outfits.
Is that flattering to know that people recognize you enough to want to copy you?
Well, no, flattery is when they give you money for it.
As always, you can find out more at conman.com.au. This has been Scammapalooza.